You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. I'm Corbin Smith, host of the Locked On Seahawks podcast, joined by Rob Rang. We've got some breaking news we're going to be covering out of Renton here to kick off our Tuesday show. The Seahawks making a few moves with their 2019 draft class in the second quarter. It's Throwback Tuesday. Rob and I will be looking at former Seahawks who also starred for the 49ers. Going to be some modern flair to this list, obviously. And then we'll close out the show with some defensive takeaways from Sunday's win at CenturyLink Field. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Seattle bringing one rookie back into the fold, activating into the roster, and jettisoning another one of them. Activating Phil Haynes from the PUP list today, and then choosing to cut Gary Jennings, giving him his walking papers. He's heading to the waiver wire. Not exactly an unexpected news story, but they were running up to the final moment to be able to activate Haynes.
Yeah, they were, and I think that they were going to try and exhaust all possibilities just to make sure that they felt that Phil Haynes was going to be ready to go. And I think that the fact that the Seahawks do have the depth that they have on the interior offensive line, we've talked so much about Jamarco Jones and his rise, but then the fact that Jordan Ruse has come in to be Seattle's primary backup center now with Joey Hunt as a starter, I think that makes a lot of sense to have Haynes, and it's. You know, it's sad for Gary Jennings, obviously a fourth round pick. There's going to be a lot of expectations there, but he has to glut at the position now with the addition of Josh Gordon and the emergence of DK Metcalf as a superstar, that I think that this move made a lot of sense for the Seahawks.
They needed to bring back Haynes with Ethan Posick still 4 weeks away minimum from being able to come back from injured reserve if they choose to use that. It sounds like Ed Dixon's going to be brought back potentially this week, so they'll be down to just one injured reserve reactivation they can use. And down later in the season, you might as well just use it, so maybe Posick will come back. But now there's not as much urgency to do that. If there's another player that ends up on injured reserve, they're not going to be able to come back until the playoffs anyway. So there's a chance you could see Posick back this season, but this absolutely needed to be done from a depth standpoint because, yes, Jamarco Jones has done a nice job at guard, but Dwayne Brown is still battling a bicep injury. He's been able to play the last couple games, but he's 34 years old. You need to have a reliable backup behind him, and I think ultimately they would like to have Jamarco Jones playing tackle, his natural position. So bringing in Phil Haynes gives you that flexibility that he can be the guy that you drafted him to be in the fourth round this year that can come in and potentially be a starter down the road. He's still going to be playing some catch-up, but this needed to be done. He's going to bring them another big mauling force at the guard position, a guy that really can be molded by Mike Solari. So this is an exciting addition. I've been really looking forward to seeing what he can do. He's not going to be starting, obviously, unless there's injuries, but just the fact he's going to be able to be potentially active for the Seahawks the rest of the season, to me, is a big deal. You mentioned it stinks for Gary Jennings. It really does. It's just one of those number game issues, and unfortunately, he has not been able to work his way into Seattle's receiving rotation. Adding Josh Gordon to the equation just made it they had to cut a receiver. They had eight receivers on the 53-man roster, and that's something you just cannot sustain. They still like John Ursua, the seventh-round pick out of Hawaii, a lot, and Jennings actually was nearly waived at the end of September. So he seemed like the natural pick here. The writing seemed to be on the wall. This is a player that had injuries in the offseason. He struggled to grasp with figuring out the playbook, and it wasn't active for any games. Ursua has only been active for one, but the Seahawks never even attempted to get Jennings on the field and dressing him for a game. So his career ends up ending in Seattle potentially. Obviously, there's a chance he could come back on the practice squad, but I would anticipate as long as they held on to him and tried to avoid having him hit waivers, that another team is going to come in and pluck him off the waiver wire.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why Seattle waited as long as they did. Obviously, you're out here on the West Coast, and so it's just that much later in the day before teams are going to, see what's going on. And these are some of the games that teams play to try and sneak players in and off the roster onto the practice squad, things of that nature. Again, Gary Jennings is a fourth round pick, and the production that he had at West Virginia, the fact that he went to the Senior Bowl and starred there, then you're not going to sneak this guy through. If teams are interested in him, then he's obviously going to be somebody that is going to create some interest out there. But again, I think the move made a lot of sense for Seattle for all the reasons that we've mentioned. And then, in fact, specifically with John Ursua, some people might be surprised locally, nationally, that Seattle would go with a seventh round receiver rather than the player they took in the fourth round. But John Ursua is just that classic slot receiver, and there's going to be games, perhaps this season, certainly in the future, where you're going to need to kind of split the field that way. Whereas Gary Jennings, he was kind of a guy who could play lots of positions, but was more of a jack of all trades, master of none type. Whereas John Ursua really looks like he could be a master at that slot position. So again, it makes a lot of sense. Something that, you know, frankly, we've been predicting for a while now.
Bringing in Josh Gordon, you now just have a lot of guys with similar skill sets, a lot of big body receivers that can win vertically. And Gary Jennings, the one thing that he did in college that impressed me a lot, I thought he was a really good receiver out of the slot. But as you mentioned, I think John Ursua is more of the natural there. And they don't really, aside from Tyler Lockett, they don't really have another receiver in this group that really excels out of the slot. They have other guys that can play there. They've used DK Metcalf there some, and he's had some success from that position, but he's not your classic slot guy. He's your big-bodied outside receiver. So they've just got a bunch of very similar skill sets there, and that's another reason Jennings now likely will not be coming back to Seattle. I would expect a team like maybe even the team that's got one of the top couple picks on the waiver wire, the Miami Dolphins, just potentially lost Preston Williams for the season. I think that could be a team. They're looking to build young guys for the future. I could see them claiming Gary Jennings very quickly, and he may get a chance to play right away there. So maybe for him, this ultimately is going to be a good move. He just wasn't going to move up that depth chart in Seattle. As for the Seahawks, they bolster their depth in the interior offensive line, bringing back Phil Haynes. Looks like it could be a win-win for all parties here. Coming up after the break, it's Throwback Tuesday. We're going to be looking at some former Seahawks that also excelled with the 49ers. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Most guys have tried different ways to last longer, but saying the Pledge of Allegiance in your head or counting backwards from 10 doesn't always work. The folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes, the secret to longer-lasting sex. Roman Swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and fast-acting, but don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in a discreet, unmarked package, and each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. Swipes are great. They will not transfer to your partner so that you can last longer without worrying. They're super easy to use. Just take swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. Get $10 off your first order of swipes and free two-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL for $10 off and free two-day shipping. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. Welcome back, 12s. Glad to have you listening to Locked On Seahawks. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Glad to have Rob Rang joining me here for today's show. Coming up in the third quarter, we had a chance to discuss offensive takeaways from Sunday's win over the Bucks on yesterday's show. We'll swing to the defensive side today. Before we do that, though, it's Throwback Tuesday, our favorite segment of the week. Touch of history blended with football analysis. Going to be looking at a number of former Seahawks who also starred for the 49ers. And there's actually a decent number of players who are worth looking at today. Rob, I think we have to start with a Hall of Fame caliber running back who isn't in the Hall of Fame for some different reasons, but obviously put up big numbers, and that's Ricky Waters.
Yeah, I mean, Ricky Waters is just a terrific player for both franchises. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Anytime you have two teams that have been around as long as these two have, and obviously been rivals here in recent years, have been built in very similar fashions here in recent years, then you are going to have some roster turnover, and a lot of players played on both. Ricky Waters is such a terrific back. I just remember watching him at Notre Dame, and it wasn't just his ability to be a runner, but as a receiver as well. You know, for a guy that didn't have that 230, 240-pound frame, he ran like he did. I mean, he ran so hard. You know, and again, as I mentioned, just a terrific receiver out of the backfield. He was one of the true bell cow, all-purpose kind of, you know, borderline Hall of Fame kind of caliber running backs, as you mentioned. And so, to me, I think he's a terrific player to kind of start off the conversation.
had over 1,200 rushing yards in each of his first three seasons with the Seattle Seahawks, and this was as he was going into his 30s, when typically running backs completely fall off a cliff. He continued to just run through and around people. Fantastic production. The Seahawks were not great during that span, but really a great situation for them. They were able to go from Ricky Waters, who was still dominant into his 30s, going to Sean Alexander, and we know what he ended up doing for the Seahawks in his career. So they, for a really long stretch, just had outstanding play in the backfield. Even before Ricky Waters, he had Chris Warren, too. So they've had tons of great feature backs in Seattle. That's arguably been one of their one or two best positions in franchise history, along with safety. Those are really the two spots. They have been loaded with tons of talent throughout their entire time as a franchise. You look back at his time in San Francisco, Waters actually started his career with the 49ers, had over 2,800 rushing yards, 28 rushing touchdowns, 140 receptions in three seasons. So like you said, this guy was not just a running back. He was a receiver out of the backfield, was a major weapon catching passes out of the backfield. Three straight Pro Bowls, won a Super Bowl in San Francisco, had a nice run with the Eagles as well. But looking at his entire career, 10,643 rushing yards, 91 combined touchdowns. Those really are in the Hall of Fame discussion as far as numbers are concerned. The big issue was always his attitude, and the media always hated working with Ricky Waters. He was he was quite a interesting personality to deal with, and there were times his effort was questionable, and he publicly made it known that his effort was questionable. He made some business decisions on the field, and I think when you couple that with the fact that he wasn't beloved by the media, I think that's the big reason at this stage that he's not in Canton.
Well, I do. I think that's a big part of it. You know, it's been one of the knocks on Notre Dame players over the years. Is they Notre Dame players love themselves some Notre Dame players, and so you know, that was one of the knocks on him. I saw a player that, as I think you put it very well, Corbin, he made some business decisions. You know, when it was third and five and he was only get 1 yard, then he would barrel as hard as he could for that one. And then if that was it, then he would put himself down. And Sean Alexander, the first MVP in Seahawks history, did very much the exact same thing and didn't get quite as much national gripe about it as Ricky Waters did. Ricky Raging Waters. I mean, he was, you know, but at the same time, when the game was on the line, I thought that he played incredibly hard. And so to me, he was a back that I thought was kind of underappreciated from a national perspective. And I think a big part of that was because, the you know, basically his entire career was spent on the West Coast for some teams that maybe weren't quite as good as the 49ers and Seahawks obviously have been at other times during their franchise's history.
Now let's swing to the defensive side of the football. Another player that started his career in San Francisco and then signed with Seattle as a free agent. That's linebacker Julian Peterson. And I'm going to start off with this, Rob, before we even go into the stats of this guy. This is an athletic linebacker that could do a bit of everything. He could rush off the edge, drop back in coverage, a really good tackler in space. And he gets a really raw deal from Seahawks fans, a lot of Seahawks fans, because his signing is associated with not bringing back Steve Hutchinson. It was 2006. Hutchinson ended up going to the Vikings, the purple pill issue, the poison pill issue. And obviously, Seahawks fans didn't forgive Hutchinson for a long time. There are some fans out there that still haven't to this day for leaving the team. But the front office was really to blame more than anything for that, with how they handled that entire situation. They ended up turning around and giving a huge contract to Peterson once they had realized they were not going to get Hutchinson back. Ended up signing Peterson, and all he did in three seasons with the Seahawks was make three Pro Bowls. And he had 10 sacks his first season with the team in 2006, only had five his last year with the team, but still had over 80 tackles, again, made the Pro Bowl. And then they ended up dealing him to the Lions. And his arrival kind of coincided with this team still being a contender in 2006. They made the playoffs in 2007, but they weren't as dominant as 2005. The team around him started to age and got worse. And we saw what happened in 2008 and 2009. They kind of had the bottom fall out a little bit. But Julian Peterson was an outstanding player for the Seahawks those 3 years with the team.
No, he really was. And you started off kind of talking about what a freakish athlete he was. I mean, that's what I remember is scouting this guy when he's coming out of Michigan State and just thinking, oh, my goodness, this is a guy who is going to just absolutely tear up the NFL. If he was drafted in today's NFL. I think they would be talking about a top 10 pick just because of his versatility. I mean, he could play that defensive end role. He could play the outside linebacker role. Similar to KJ Wright, he was long and athletic. For people who don't remember Julian Peterson, just really long arms and a huge wingspan, was able to deflect passes, was terrific off the edge as a pass rusher. The versatility to be able to play a traditional 4-3 outside linebacker role as well as that 3-4 rush linebacker role. To me, he was kind of those versatile chess piece defenders that you could just move him just about anywhere you wanted to move him. And so that always intrigued me. So, yeah, I'm sure there's some Seahawks fans out there who are going to kind of associate Peterson with Steve Hutchinson. And, yeah, what a tragedy, frankly, that was to lose one of the most dominant offensive linemen I've ever had an opportunity to watch. But at the same time, that had nothing to do with Julian Peterson. I mean, he was a terrific player. As you mentioned, a 3-time Pro Bowler for the Seahawks, had his best statistical seasons with the Seahawks rather than with the 49ers. And, just an absolutely terrific player on and off the field in so many different ways.
He also made 2 Pro Bowls, and he was a 1-time first-team All-Pro selection with the 49ers. I would agree with you. A couple of his best seasons happened in Seattle, but he was really good in San Francisco, too. 394 tackles, 5 interceptions, 21.5 sacks during his time with San Francisco. So this is a guy, like I've said a couple times, could do a little bit of everything. And I do think in today's game, he would have been even better. And not that he's been out of the game that long, but if he was drafted in 2019, I agree with you. This is a top-10 pick with the versatility, the way the game is changing. This is the kind of linebacker that would fit in the modern game. We're going to close out real quick. We're not going to spend too much time on this guy because he's still playing, but we can't have Throwback Tuesday looking at Seahawks and 49ers without mentioning Richard Sherman. I mean, what can I say about Richard Sherman? 32 interceptions with the Seahawks from 2011 to 2017, 5 Pro Bowls, 3-time first-team All-Pro on a legendary defense, one of the main focal points of that defense. Tons of swagger, loves to run his mouth, but fans ate it up when he was dominating for Seattle. Now in San Francisco, it's a little different how they view him running his mouth, but when he was doing it in that 2013 NFC Championship game, fans absolutely ate that up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he had one of the most iconic plays in not only Seahawks history, but I would argue in NFL or certainly NFC Championship history, with the tip pass that Malcolm Smith intercepted. And so just a spectacular player. I mean, everybody's going to give him a lot of credit for his coverage ability, those long arms, his anticipation. But what a tackler as well. I mean, truly, we mentioned Ricky Waters and Julian Peterson as well, is just such well-rounded football players. Ricky Waters, everybody remembers him scoring, as far as running the ball. But what a great receiver. Julian Peterson, remembers the sacks, but he was very good against the run and in coverage as well. Same thing with Richard Sherman, just a quality all-around football player. I don't think he gets enough credit for what a tackler that he is. Frankly, Seattle has struggled to replace his versatility on the outside, his leadership. While some in the media, he obviously had his issues with, there's a reason why that he is still beloved in terms of that locker room and some of the other Seahawks players who have left that just regard him, put him in such high regard. So I think we're talking about a future Hall of Fame player here. And a guy that, give him a lot of credit. When he had the multiple Achilles injuries and wound up going to San Francisco, there's a lot of people out there nationally who didn't think that he would be able to duplicate the success. And he's having a terrific year. He's a big part of the reason why San Francisco heads into this game undefeated.
Yeah, and he was also a guy that really changed the mold for what teams were looking for at the corner position, too. A 5th-round pick that nobody really talked much about going into that 2011 draft. He's long and wiry. He was a receiver for a good portion of his career at Stanford, so it didn't have great numbers at the combine. So he fell to the 5th round, and he's had that chip on his shoulder ever since. And now you see all kinds of teams, and a lot of times they have failed. They're trying to find those really tall, long-armed corners so they can duplicate what the Seahawks did with Richard Sherman. And unfortunately, you're not going to find very many guys like that. There's been a few other big-bodied corners that have emerged. The Seahawks really like one of them they've got right now in Trey Flowers. Flowers, but he has not become anything close to Richard Sherman up to this point. A lot of teams have really they've swung and missed trying to find that next Richard Sherman. So he really was supposed to be the guy that changed the mold and ultimately proved to be a very unique chess piece for the Seahawks on their defense. Peloton is offering a limited time offer. Get $100 off all accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED to get started. When we come back after the break, it's time to talk some defense. Looking back at Sunday's shootout against the Bucks, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Corbin Smith alongside my co-host Rob Rang. The Seahawks moved to 7-2 on Sunday, winning a 40-34 shootout against the Buccaneers. As you can tell by the score, obviously a game where there was a lot of offensive fireworks. There were a few big plays on defense for both teams, but for the most part, this was a duel between Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston throwing the football to their receivers on the outside. And Rob, the Seahawks defensively, what can we say at this point? When you get this deep into the season, you kind of are what your statistics say you are. And right now, this is just not a very good defense.
Well, I think it's a defense that is, you know, the rest of the NFL, I think, is recognizing what it is. It doesn't have a great pass rush. Its corners are going to play off a lot of the time. They're going to have a lot of short to intermediate holes in their zone coverage. If you're going to play more man coverage like Seattle did against Tampa, then you have to be able to match up with their athletes. And that's very difficult to do when you have a speedster like Godwin and you have just an absolute beast like Mike Evans. So, you know, I thought that it was predictable. I mean, to me, this was a game that looked like it was going to be a shootout. It absolutely was. But still, I think that there's plenty of nuggets to be found in this game on the defensive side of the ball. The fact that I think Bobby Wagner, you know, continues to have a very good season, has the pass rush ability, as he proved with yet another sack, when you need it. That Seattle has that kind of bend but don't break mentality right now because they do have the MVP caliber quarterback in Russell Wilson. So I think you can kind of ring yourself crazy with all of the statistics that suggest that Seattle's defense is struggling. At the same time, they continue to win football games, and they do it in a lot of creative fashions.
I'm just going to have to argue at this point, though, they're winning in spite of the defense. And there are some positives there. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's all negative, but going back and watching the film from this game, it feels like I'm playing a broken record every week, but this front line simply cannot rush the passer, and it hasn't been helped. I love that you did mention this a moment ago. Teams recognize that the Seahawks are playing off coverage. They're in zone. Those short to intermediate routes have been way too easy for quarterbacks to connect on against this zone-heavy Seahawks defense, and that really eliminates the pass rush. So that, to me, comes back to coaching. You know, at some point, you've got to change things up a little bit and try to force the issue by taking away some of those short and intermediate throws. And I know Pete Carroll is extremely scared of deep balls downfield. That's his number one priority to stop. He wants to stop the run, and he wants to stop those explosive downfield plays. But at the same time, seeing how a lot of these teams have been able to dink and dunk, and the Buccaneers were able to finish most of their drives in this game. So it wasn't like some of the earlier games in the season where Seattle was able to hold the opponent to a bunch of field goals. The Ravens game jumps out immediately to me that Baltimore kept getting deep into their own territory, only had one offensive touchdown to show for it. This week was not that way, and obviously the Buccaneers have better receivers than what the Ravens have, and the Ravens were also missing Marquise Brown in that game too. So not a lot of weapons for Lamar Jackson to throw the football to, but still, you got to wonder, you know, are they going to finally make some adjustments there, or is there really that much fear if we play a little bit more aggressive press coverage here, we're going to end up getting burned over the top? Maybe there's a lack of trust in the safeties they've got. You got a rookie in Marquise Blair that's playing free safety now, and so that's a little bit of a change up for him. I still think he's at his best up to the line of scrimmage playing strong safety, but he's capable, athletic enough to play that free safety position, maybe trying to protect him a little bit more. And so there are certainly some things that are concerning. I still think the pass rush, getting no quarterback hits through 2.5 quarters, That is a big deal. They've had several games where they haven't been able to get any sacks. And we talk about this time and time again on this show. Sacks are not everything with pass rush. I have seen some really good Seahawks teams that had a great pass rush that were in the middle of the pack for sacks, but they had high pressure rates and they had a lot of quarterback hits. This team doesn't have any of those three things right now. So until that is able to turn the corner, and we're getting deep enough in the season, maybe it won't. If they can't get that pass rush going a little bit, I find it really hard to believe this team is going to be able to be in that discussion as one of the top two or three teams in the NFC, despite the record they've got right now.
Well, I think you make some really great points, because the biggest thing is that I think that sacks are so overblown in today's NFL, because offenses are getting quarterbacks are getting the ball out of their hands so damn quick that you're essentially eliminating the pass rush, and that's by design. That's because teams like Seattle have been press heavy in the past and just, you know, basically, you know, bullied receivers at the line of scrimmage with guys like Richard Sherman and Brandon Brown, are just using their size and length and just swallowing receivers at the line of scrimmage. And that allowed Seattle's pass rush to be even more effective than some of those pass rushers perhaps would have been. I mean, there's a reason why the Cliff Averills of the world, the Michael Bennett's of the world, the Frank Clarks and Jaron Reed's of the world had their great success when Seattle had those, you know, better or more quality defensive back play. I think that's part of it. And the NFL has changed a little bit. Now, you think about the quarterbacks just in this division alone, you know, that's the whole strategy is to try and get the ball out of the hands, especially, you know, with Jared Goff and with Kyler Murray. It'll be interesting to see if Garoppolo can have that same kind of effectiveness. But Jameis Winston and Matt Schaub in the last couple of games in particular, I mean, these are some slow-footed, wind-up kind of quarterbacks, and they're still getting the ball out of their hands quicker. So I think that's absolutely the game plan of teams coming up against Seattle, is that they want to get the ball out of their hands. They don't want to be the team that allows Seattle's pass rush to get right. So I love that you mentioned about the quarterback hits and things of that nature. To me, that's really the bigger concern. And I am seeing the quarterbacks are having to adjust. And so that's why I do feel confident that Seattle is kind of playing a little bit of rope-a-dope here. They do still have a very young defensive line that is continuing to gel. I do think that we're going to see better play down the stretch, specifically from Jadeveon Clowney, Ziggy Ansah, LJ Collier, Jaron Reed. I think those are the four guys that you're going to see start to kind of tick things up a little bit, because you're going to be going up against some of the better quarterbacks who also have such great confidence in themselves that they hold the ball a little bit longer. That's going to give Seattle's pass rush a little bit more opportunity to get home.
We were starting to delve into this a little bit yesterday, but it was an offensive geared episode, so we both held back a little bit. I think we do need to discuss a little bit about what we saw on Sunday. Jamar Taylor played 43% of the defensive snaps. I believe that was the highest percentage that he has played this year. So they played a lot more nickel against Tampa Bay's passing offense. And a part of it was just out of necessity in that second half. They were getting torched by Jameis Winston, and they needed that extra corner in there. It really didn't do much to help slow down that Bucs passing attack. And you got to give them a ton of credit. They've got outstanding receivers on the outside, as we talked about some yesterday. Mike Evans and Godwin are both really, really good players. And so that was going to be a matchup problem for the Seahawks anyway going into this football game. But the nickel defense didn't really help out that much. And that's where I think Quandre Diggs can come in. It sounds like he's got a much better chance to play and make his debut against the 49ers on Monday night. With the way that McDougald and Marquise Blair are playing at the safety spots right now, I think where Diggs can help this football team the most is playing that slot corner position, and it's nothing against Jamar Taylor, but he's just not a great slot corner. I think Quandre Diggs can be a great slot. I saw that on film in 2017. If he's healthy, he's got the quickness, he's got the coverage skills. You can blitz him, and he's really effective in that avenue. He'll come up and stick people in the run game. I think that this defense would be a lot better off with a healthy Quandre Diggs playing that position and using a bit more nickel. That's not saying completely go away from their base. You got to get those three linebackers out there and still play quite a bit with that. That's a really good group for them. But at the same time, I would really like to see more nickel defense, especially against some of these teams they're going to be playing that have good receivers on the outside. They have good quarterbacks. They're going to be playing a lot better quarterbacks in the second half than they saw for the most part in the first half. And after giving up almost 800 passing yards the last 2 weeks. That, to me, seems to be a change that needs to be made. Get that aggressive slot corner in there that has a proven track record recently of being really good at the position, that can also play safety in a pinch. It gives you a lot of defensive flexibility, and I think that could end up helping their pass rush a little bit just by bolstering their coverage.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that, and I'm very intrigued to see what Diggs can do. And going back to an earlier point you made, Corbin, about Seattle safeties, I think that's part of it as well. You do have to kind of protect yourself with Bradley McDougal. Then this is a guy who runs 4.7s. I mean, he's a very instinctive player, but against a team as explosive as Tampa Bay is, and that the quarterback with Jameis has the arm that he has and the field vision and, frankly, the recklessness that he has, then you had to kind of protect yourself deep. And Marquise Blair, as everybody knows, is a rookie. He's going to make some mistakes. The fact that he was not able to come through with the interception that hit him right in the hands, and ultimately resulted in Brett Perriman getting his touchdown and really kind of made this game, a little frightening for Seattle fans early on, I think was a reflection of that inexperience. So to me, again, I stress that I think that Seattle's defense is kind of coming together in the second half. I think that in the past, we've seen Seattle's offense be the one that got hot late. I think it's going to be Seattle's defense that gets hot late. We'll see. Maybe I'm just the eternal optimist, but I also just kind of have some experience kind of seeing what or kind of projecting what players not only are right now, but where they're going to become. And I think the Quandre Diggs, I'm happy that you mentioned it, because to me, I think he could be a big part of the future.
I'm excited to see this kid play. I really loved what I saw in film, not just the ability to play slot. I liked him at both safety positions, too. He's a guy that can really hit people. He's aggressive in coverage. I just really like his playing style, and I think it fits their defense well. I'm curious to see what the Seahawks choose to do there. If I was in their position, if I was Pete Carroll right now, I think the slot corner position is where he can really help them the most, but you can obviously mix him in at safety too. There's a lot of different things you can do with him, and I'm glad that you mentioned Blair's missed opportunity on the interception, because that was one of the bad bounces that went against the Seahawks on Sunday. Obviously, they benefited from Chris Carson having that one fumble punched out of bounds. They got lucky there. Jameis Winston having the ball slip out of his hands on a fumble. So they got some lucky bounces of their own, but that certainly was something that, it looked like Blair had perfect coverage there. It was a bad throw by Jameis Winston, and it was one that he made a bad decision on, but Blair just couldn't reel it in, and then Breshad Perriman comes over and just happens to be in the right place at the right time and catches him on the end zone. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, and in that case, the Buccaneers were certainly lucky, and they benefited from that, but still a lot of concerns with the passing defense. I agree with you with the moving pieces that they've got on the defensive line, breaking in a new rookie safety. Diggs going to be a guy that's going to take some time to get acclimated when he's in the lineup. And Jaron Reed's still only been back for 3 games. All that change makes it really tough to find consistency on defense. If they can keep all those guys in the lineup for a few weeks in a row and really get in a rhythm, then maybe we could see them do what the offense, as you said, has done in recent seasons and really catch fire in the second half. If that happens, this is a very dangerous football team, but I have to see it start happening on the field. At this point, we just haven't seen that consistency, and until I see it, the defense is maybe what's going to hold this team back in 2019. We'll just have to wait and see. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, you can contact me, LockedSeahawks@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform by visiting us at LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Crossover Wednesday episode. I'll be joining Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers to break down Monday's marquee matchup at Levi Stadium. The 49ers sitting at 8-0, the only undefeated team in the NFL and in first place in the NFC West. The Seahawks will be looking to pick up a big road win and cut into their lead in the division. Hope you'll be listening in. Go Hawks.